The who, sir?
He asked back. He spoke in a quiet, measured nighttime voice like he was worried about waking the guests stacked high above him. Lila Hoth and Svetlana Hoth, I said. The guy got a look on his face like he didn't know what I was talking about, and refocused on his screen and hit a couple of keys on his keyboard. He scrolled up and down and hit a couple more keys and said,
I'm sorry, sir, but I can't find a record of any guests under that name.
I told him the suite number. He hit a couple more keys, and his mouth turned down in puzzled surprise, and he said,
That suite hasn't been used at all this week. It's very expensive and quite hard to rent.
I double-checked the number in my head, and I said, I was in it last night. It was being used then. And I met the occupants again today in the tea room. There's a signature on a check. The guy tried again. He called up tea room checks that had been charged to guest accounts. He half-turned his screen so that I could see it, too, in the sharing gesture that clerks use when they want to convince you of something. We had had tea for two plus a cup of coffee. There was no record of any such charge. Then I heard small sounds behind me. The scuff of soles on carpet, the rattle of drawn breath, the sigh of fabric moving through the air, and the clink of metal. I turned around and found myself facing a perfect semicircle of seven men. Four of them were uniformed NYPD patrolmen. Three of them were the federal agents I had met before. The cops had shotguns. The feds had something else. Chapter 42. Seven Men, Seven Weapons. The police shotguns were Franchi SPAS-12s from Italy, probably not standard NYPD issue. The SPAS-12 is a futuristic, fearsome-looking item, a semi-automatic 12-gauge smooth-bore weapon with a pistol grip and a folding stock. Advantages? Many. Drawbacks? Two. Cost was the first, but clearly some specialist division inside the police department had been happy to sign off on the purchase. Semi-automatic operation was the second drawback. It was held to be theoretically unreliable in a powerful shotgun. People who have to shoot or die worry about it. Mechanical failure happens. But I wasn't about to bet on four mechanical failures happening all at once, for the same reason I don't buy lottery tickets. Optimism is good. Blind faith is not. Two of the feds had Glock 17s in their hands, 9mm automatic pistols from Austria, square, boxy, reliable, well proven through more than 20 years of useful service. I had retained a mild personal preference for the Beretta M9, like the Franchi, also from Italy, but a million times out of a million and one, the Glock would get the job done just as well as the Beretta. Right then, the job was to keep me standing still, ready for the main attraction. The Fed leader was in the exact center of the semicircle. Three men on his left, three on his right. He was holding a weapon I had seen before only on television. I remembered it well. A cable channel in a motel room in Florence, Texas. Not the military channel. The National Geographic channel. A program about Africa. Not civil wars and mayhem and disease and starvation, a wildlife documentary. Gorillas, not gorillas. A bunch of zoological researchers was tracking an adult male silverback. They wanted to put a radio tag in its ear. The creature weighed close to 500 pounds, a quarter of a ton. They put it down with a dart gun loaded with primate tranquilizer. That was what the Fed leader was pointing at me. A dart gun. The National Geographic people had taken great pains to reassure their viewers that the procedure was humane. They had shown detailed diagrams and computer simulations. The dart was a tiny feathered cone with a surgical steel shaft. The tip of the shaft was a sterile ceramic honeycomb laced with anesthetic. The dart fired at high velocity, and the shaft buried itself a half inch into the gorilla and stopped. The tip wanted to keep on going. Momentum. Newton's law of motion. The shock and the inertia exploded the ceramic matrix, and the potion contained in the honeycomb flung itself onward. Not quite droplets, not quite an aerosol. Like a heavy mist spreading under the skin, flooding tissue the way a paper towel soaks up a spilled drop of coffee. The gun itself was a one-shot deal. It had to be loaded with a single dart and a single tiny bottle of compressed gas to power it. Nitrogen, as I recalled. Reloading was laborious. It was better to hit first time. The researchers had hit first time in the documentary film. The gorilla had been groggy after 8 seconds and in a coma after 20. Then it had woken up in perfect health 10 hours later. But it had weighed twice what I weigh. Behind me was the hotel's reception counter. I could feel it against my back. It had a ledge about 14 inches wide, set probably 42 inches off the floor. Bar height. Convenient for a customer to spread his papers on, convenient to sign things on. Behind that was a drop to a regular desk-height counter for the clerks. It was maybe 30 inches deep. Or more, I wasn't sure. But the total obstacle was a high and wide hurdle, impossible to clear from a standing start, especially when facing the wrong way. And pointless, anyway. Clearing the counter would not put me in another room. I would still be right there, just behind the counter rather than in front of it. No net gain, and maybe a big net loss if I landed awkwardly on a rolling chair or got tangled up in a telephone wire. I turned my head and glanced behind me. No one there. The desk people had filed out, left and right. They had been coached, maybe even rehearsed. The 7 men in front of me had a clear field of fire. No way forward, no way back. I stood still. The Fed leader was sighting down the barrel of his dart gun and aiming directly at my left thigh. My left thigh made a moderately large target. No fat under the skin, just hard flesh, full of capillaries and other aids to rapid and efficient blood circulation. Completely unprotected, except for my new blue pants, which were made of thin, summer-weight cotton. Don't come dressed like that or you won't get in. I tensed up, as if muscle tone would make the damn thing bounce off. Then I relaxed again. Muscle tone hadn't helped the gorilla, and it wouldn't help me. Way behind the 7 men, I could see a paramedic crew in a gloomy corner. Fire department uniforms, 3 men, 1 woman. They were standing and waiting. They had a wheeled gurney ready. When all else fails, start talking.